Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 131 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another TDD, TIE, They Don't Do That in Europe panel with our friends Mr. David Palin and Scott Diedenbach. We talk about last weekend's races at NBX and also Resolution, and then we get into it. Cyclocross Nationals, our predictions, a preview of the course, everything that's going to happen during the week. We get into the weeds. And I can tell you, without a doubt, 100% accuracy, that we got something big very wrong. But you're going to have to go to cxairs.com later this week to see exactly what that is. But I can guarantee you, we got it wrong. Other than that, everything else is perfectly dead on. We nailed it. Podiums for all of the elite races, minus one thing we got wrong. But I can't tell you what that is yet. Okay. This episode brought to you by Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network and Video Network. Go to wideanglepodium.com. Check out the coffee we have for sale there from Grimper Brothers. Proceeds from the sale of the Full Schleck coffee come back to the show, help support the network. It's a win-win for everyone. You get great coffee, we get a couple bucks in our pocket to help pay for the servers and microphones and all that other good stuff. You know, another thing that is now on Wide Angle Podium is Cyclocross Television. That's a huge project for me this year, really trying to grow that. I appreciate everybody who subscribed already to the YouTube page. I would ask that if you haven't, go check it out. You know, one of the things that we're always asking for is more coverage, more video coverage of the UCI races in the US. And I'm trying to provide that, but I need your help to make it happen. You know, I'm very appreciative of the sponsors that have come forward to help me create this content, including Maxxis Tires, who's our title sponsor. Huge shout out to Maxxis. Thank you very much. Also to Feedback Sports and to all of you who have donated to Wide Angle Podium. That helps as well. So you can go in, you can donate, you can pick the shows that you want to support, like Cyclocross Television, like Cyclocross Radio, Bike Shop CX, which Scott and David host. You can support the Consummate Athlete, the Slow Ride Podcast. You know, these are the core shows that are building this network, building this viewership. We have over a million and a half. It's getting up to 2 million. Spencer's going to correct me when I get these numbers wrong, but it's a heck of a lot of people who have downloaded episodes, and a very, very, very small fraction of them who have become members of the network. We want to grow that. I want to know why. I want to know what we can do to make you a member. You know, hit me up on Twitter at CXHairs or Instagram, or even shoot me an email, feedback@cxhairs.com. Let me know what else we can do to make sure that you become a member of this community, because we really want to have you. And that's it. All right, let's get on with the show. TDD, TIE, Scott Diedenbach is going to lead the way, and he is going to do that right now.
You're not saying anything on purpose, are you? Hello? Anybody there? Do you want me to start the show?
Scott?
Yes?
You started.
David, you're ruining it. I need a clean take now. Scott? Say yes again.
Yes.
Scott? Okay, third.
Yes.
Take three. Scott?
Yes?
Start the show.
All right, everybody. We're back for another edition of Crosshairs Radio.
Hang on. We need to go back. First off, you don't say Crosshairs Radio. You say They Don't Do That in Europe. Second off, changed the name to Cyclocross Radio weeks ago.
I did notice that, and I was going to say that, but then I drew a blank, so I said Crosshairs. I even wrote it at the top of my notes. Cyclocross Radio episode 131.
This is the best episode yet, the best intro yet.
You better cut all this out.
Nope, not going to do it.
You know better than that.
All right, ready?
Wait.
Here we go.
Figured out who we are already.
Wait. Scott?
Yes?
Start the show.
All right, everybody, we are back for another edition of TDDTIE. They don't do that in Europe. With me, as always, center stage, Mr. David Palin.
I made it. I told your mom I would amount to something in life.
And hovering over David's head, as usual.
It's not easy being small.
Mr. Cyclocross Radio himself, Bill Shiken.
Hey, Scott, how are
What's
you doing?
What's up, Bill? I'm doing well. Why are we doing a show in the middle of the night, you guys? You know, when it's up to me,
start in the middle of the night.
When it's up to me, we're drinking coffee and like waking up. When it's up to you guys, it's the middle of the night. Seven is the middle of the night. All right, we are here this week to do.
Hey, I have a question. Just going back to who's in the middle.
Yeah.
Who was usually the center square?
Well, before, as in some version of Skype, I don't know which one it was. I was usually the center.
No. Just because going back to it wasn't Paul Lind.
Oh, yes, it was, wasn't it?
Was it? Was Paul Lind the center?
Because
square?
He was kind of the premier guy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Every now and then it'd be like Rich Little Paul Lind was sick or on vacation or something. They put Rich Little in there or something.
Flip Wilson made it once.
I think I saw one with Lucille Ball in the center too. Actually.
Well, I'll be Charo above.
She was always in the top left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's so many people right now going
ingrained in his brain.
I do, man. Now, when you send those correction texts and emails, make sure they go to crosshairsradio@gmail.com.
Just perfect. So, guys, we decided we wanted to have at least one more episode of TDDTIE before U.S. Nationals in December this year. It's so exciting. So we got some emails we're going to talk about, quickly run over some results from this past weekend, and then talk about upcoming U.S. Nationals. How does that sound?
That's good. Hey, I'm going
to
quick little change to what we decided. Let's do those results and then go into that email.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds good. So, all right, are you guys ready then?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, we had a couple races this past weekend in the U.S., and like we've said many times before, this is the kind of stuff we like to see, right? One race East Coast, one race kind of in the middle of the country, far apart, with different people from different regions getting to go to the closest race to them, and it usually leads to some cool stuff. So we're going to start with the Resolution Cup in Texas, and I'm going to start with the women. So for the elite women, in first place was Courtney McFadden. In second place, this is day one. In second place was Katie Klaus. Third place, Raylan Nuss. Fourth place, Lily Williams. Fifth place, Anna, is it Magali? Magali? I'm not sure exactly how that's pronounced. But a nice win for Courtney. It's always good to get a win this close to Nationals coming in. So that's a good thing to see for her, and I'm sure it's a confidence boost. And any other comments or questions or whatever about that?
Yeah, great race for Courtney. You know, podium finish for Raylan Nuss, who's had sort of a coming out party in the U.S. scene this year. And then Lily Williams still putting in some good rides, and Katie Klaus, you know, looking for that prepping for that U23 title again. I'm sure it's something we'll be talking about later on. But between, you know, you had Katie Klaus up there in second at 18 years old. You had Bridget Tooley at seventh at 17 years old. Hannah Arensman.
I mean, Turner Ramsey.
Yeah. So nice sort of opportunity for some younger riders to race at the front of this race, which is always good to see.
Yeah, agreed. Get some points, help out with some starting stuff, and not a huge women's field, but still good win for Courtney. And it just looked like a cool event. Switching over to the men, first place is Gage Hecht, second place Drew Dillman, third place Brandon Fix, fourth place Cody the Kid Kaiser, and fifth place Nicholas Gowron. Is it Gowron from France? Gage, I think Drew tweeted out that he and Gage were kind of close coming into a sprint, and he basically had no chance to out-sprint Gage, right? I mean, that's what we'd expect, I think, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much everybody's take on it when they're coming to the finishing line with Gage.
Yeah, exactly. Any other mentions in there that we want to get in there?
No, I think that
11th place.
Tyler Cloutier
still off the points by one
missing
place.
That point by
missing
one
that point
spot.
By one spot.
Yeah, that's a good mention. Bill, what were you going
to
say?
Oh, I was just going to say Brandon Fix continuing to have a strong year, you know, two Alpha Bike Groove Subaru kids on the podium there with Drew in the middle, and also great to see Drew getting healthy. I think that he is going to be a bit of an unknown factor for this Nationals race.
Yeah, and you know, here's another thing. Just looking at this, we have four non-U.S. countries represented in this men's race.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, thinking about this rule change that everybody's kind of excited about. Here's a C2 race with four non-U.S. countries represented.
You know, and that so. You know, we can let's just jump around already, and that actually was one of the emails that we received. From Frank Deal, who is the promoter of Go Cross, or one of the promoters for and organizers of Go Cross down in Roanoke, which is a C2, and I think that they actually have ambitions to keep on growing that race. So this is a rule that may affect them down the line. And the rule we're talking about is what the UCI just implemented for next season, in which to be a C1 race, you have to have it's five different nationalities represented in, is it each field or total for the day? I think it's each field, right? Men's and women's to be a
C1. And then there's something about 10 individuals too, isn't there?
10 riders that represent five countries.
Okay.
At least five countries, yes.
So you could, in theory, have three from some countries, two from some countries, one from some countries, but it has to be...
So you just need
It has to be
total. Right. So you have to have at least 10 people?
Yeah,
was my understanding. 10 total riders.
I'm trying to find the rule right now.
Representing at least five other countries.
Five other countries? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, besides the host country. Okay. Or maybe includes the host
country.
That
makes more sense.
Yeah, so,
you can't
so
include
you,
the host
you have
country.
To you have to stock up on Canadians.
Right. Yeah, you could have five Canadian riders. Right, exactly. As long as there was another four countries still in there.
Okay.
They could each have one rider.
An event. So this is the whole event. So this is total accumulated for men elite, men U23, and women. An event can only do a request of upgrade to class one if the previous season's race had at least 10 foreign starters representing at least five different nationalities. So that's across the board. The interesting thing is that what happens to existing, this doesn't include existing C1 races that want to be C1 again. So I'm assuming by this wording, and I know this, we're rehashing what we already talked about, that you sort of get a pass, right? And maybe they'll firm that up.
No,
as long as you stay a C1, you can continue being a C1. Even
but
if you
have
haven't
to,
met
you
those.
Probably have to meet this rule again. But let's say you didn't meet it this year, you're not going to be like knocked off the block for getting a C1 next year.
That would be fair. That would seem fair. Yes.
I thought somewhere in it said it specifies what about this very situation. Although I don't see it right now, so I'm not going to belabor the point.
Well, it does.
Here.
It says a class one event which would not respect the above mentioned in 2018 and 2019. This is, so here you go. We'll automatically get the class two status for 2019-2020.
Yeah.
Exceptions for the events which were class one in the 2017-18 season and received the organization of the national championships in 2018-2019. So yeah, you're right. So those, if they didn't do it this year, and there are a couple, there's Charm City didn't, I think, was the one, and then I feel like there was
Rochester
maybe. So that's gonna be interesting to see what happens with those races.
We're pretty sure that Cincy did meet that.
They did.
Yeah.
And that is what I was gonna say. And I didn't really consider this part that C1s were gonna lose status. if that's the case, then this will have an impact. But without it, I think that all of our race promoters are savvy enough to be able to get these numbers. You know, as we said, yes, just from the getting enough Canadians in there, and then also getting, we have enough sort of expatriate dual citizen racers out there who I think are really happy about this rule. I mean, Maria Larkin, because she's like the, you know, she's going to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons, because they want to make sure that they can continue to be a C1. And, you know, the reading of the rules, they have to do it this year. So they have to bring them in. I don't think it's fair to races like Charm City to drop this rule after their race has happened.
Yeah, because they didn't really have a chance to, you know, they didn't even know what the rule was going
to
be.
Something that you doesn't, that right.
Yeah,
didn't
you didn't
exist,
even know so about it.
That
yeah.
doesn't seem fair at all. So I it'll be interesting to see.
And it's
see
even
what
and even
there.
These even
they
these races
argue their case.
But even these races that did know, it's not like they had a lot of time. I mean, they still had to react very quickly. Right. So I don't know how fair that is either. So, but at least they had some kind of time.
Yeah, you know? And you know, I'm hearing of other, you know, racers out there who may hold dual citizenship who are thinking about getting licensed in the other countries, which, you know, I would do as well, because somebody's going to pay you to go to the race now.
Sure.
To make sure that you meet those standards. Where I think this is going to hurt, and I've already heard it and sort of went through the numbers, and they're close, but I think it's going to be a tougher one for them, are the Japanese races. Nobuyama was a C1 this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, they usually have the U.S. and Australia check. So they're really close, but I think it's that 10 total that's hurting them a little more.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Give Brandon a call. Right? From New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's right around the corner.
Yeah. See,
well,
that'll
yeah. I mean, they already get Australians there. Can New Zealand be not hard either? So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's going to make it tougher for Australia, say. I mean, they don't have C1s yet, but, you know, now they've got to meet this requirement at a C2 in Australia before they can get a C1. So that's going to make that a little tougher. So did we want to read Frank's question? People are listening going, what the hell are
he asked, if the UCI enforces the foreign starters rule, do you foresee a more isolated American CX scene or a larger need for another US Cup, US GP type series? I think those are two separate points.
Yeah, and I agree.
I'm going to be a little bit of the devil's advocate here on the first part. Where he is talking about if we're going to see a more isolated scene. What I see now is US C1s. If you take and I know this is out there, and I think this may have been a little bit of the impetus for the rule. If you take the European stance on UCI, on US C1s, they're not fair.
Right.
Because they have to travel so far?
No, because take Hasselt, for instance.
Yeah.
Is a C2 race.
And there's higher ranked riders at that than there is at a C1.
Sane Khan, Low Soul.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's your top five. They're a little higher ranked than the top five of what, other than Katie, of the top five in it, that at NBX.
Sure.
So is that fair?
Yeah. No, I can sympathize with that point for sure, with that European stance, like you said. This kind of goes to what I've been saying for a while, but I think we need, if some race does have to go, say, down, I'm calling it down to a C2, we need stronger. We need good, strong base of C2s in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been this tendency for everyone, and you're one of the exceptions, Bill, to your credit. There's this tendency to want to jump up to a C1 instead of being like, hey, let's make a really good C2, which is what you've done at DCCX. And I think we need more of that. And if this stimulates more of that, I don't necessarily think it's a terrible thing.
Yeah, I think that if they want to contract and make C1s really special and there are only a couple here, I don't know. I'm sort of torn. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. And I think you're right. If there are less C2s, I don't know. I go back and forth on this all the time. I mean, again, looking at the men from Hasselt, this is a C2 race. So this is like what a lot of the domestic pros in the U.S., if they're at the top end, aren't even going to race this because it doesn't matter as much. Kevin Pals, Jens Adam, Ellie Easerbeet, Marcel Meissen, Tom Mason, Corne Van Kessel, David Vanderpil, Tim Merlier, Nicholas Kleppa, Jim Arnouts.
What are you, like 10? That's 10 already.
That's
10. Or something, right? Yeah.
I'm guessing out of that 10, a couple of those guys would probably do pretty well in at NBX this past weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a C1.
Yes.
So
those are all valid points. And I, you know what, the downside, I guess, is if we have fewer C1s, more C2s, then the chances for Americans to stay here in the U.S. and get enough points to grid well in the World Championships and in Europe in general is tougher for them.
Yeah.
Not saying it's right or wrong, but that's the implication.
You know that... Well, go ahead, Bill.
No, go, Scott.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things was, one of the ideas was we have these C1s so that, you know, we'll get Americans with better starting positions. And it has certainly been good for the American women. I think they have done a good job. They go over to Europe with better starting positions and do well. But I'll be honest with you, the American men have gone over there with better starting positions and not blown it out of the water. They haven't been impressive. You know, they've gone, I'm not like saying anybody's no good or anything like that, but we've gone over there and with better starting spots and finished lower than the starting positions that we've held when we've gone over there, our American men riders. So
yeah.
I think, you know, people look at that and say, hey, this is an unfair situation. You're getting these starting spots and it's showing that, you know, the caliber is not as high over there yet as it is in Europe.
When you look at road racing and you look at road racing from grassroots on up, is there any hand-wringing about, oh, the riders who are going to race in the World Tour aren't racing enough domestically? Do we ever hear that?
I haven't heard that. It's always, they got to get over there. It's the way to do it.
Right.
Right.
So it's kind of unfair that we want to hang on to our top cyclocross racers and have them race in the U.S. and then also want them to succeed in Europe. Because it's the only discipline I can think of that does that. Mountain bike's the same way. You know, it's a little different because it's really only the World Cups and then there are other races. But if you're racing everything in Europe. You're not coming back and doing like epic rides. I mean, some riders are. There are exceptions. But for the most part, cyclocross seems to be, at least in the U.S., and I think it's because we've created this great culture and built up these riders and have all these great races, but it really is the only discipline in which we expect our U.S.-based riders to race all the big races in the U.S. and then still succeed in Europe. And I think that's a difficult task to achieve.
So my question then, Bill, is, is that an expectation that we're setting? Is it, and maybe the we is bigger than the U.S., but is that what the UCI is setting by the current way it's set up? Or is that because, for some reason, personal choices, lifestyles, whatever, there's more people on the roadside, maybe because there's less road racing here in general, but more people from the roadside are willing to give up living here in the States and go base themselves in Girona or in Europe, wherever, to take a shot at it?
Well, I think that, I mean, for your first part, I don't think the UCI necessarily is doing anything for the betterment of the sport. I won't give them that much credit.
I think that mainly what these rules are doing is setting up a situation where you're going to have less C1s that are going to be worth more, and then you're going to have these C2s, and then they're just going to try to, and the other thing that they're doing, you know, with the series saying each nation only gets to have two UCI series, but of eight races, but the World Cups, we want to expand to 12 races, if not more.
Yeah.
And that's so they can make more money because they own the World Cup. So I think that to say, is this something that the UCI is trying to do? I think that's a whole different can of worms. I'm just saying I and we struggle with this, and you can't, you know, I know I've argued the other side of this before, but it's all, you know, I think one of the things that we do in these conversations is try to, you know, figure it out loud and figure out what's going on and what's best. And I really have started, and you know, we've sort of fallen on this side of it as well, but the way to be successful and why maybe the racers aren't doing as well is because they're trying to live these dual lives. And I think that you really need to do what, you know, I mean, Katie Compton already said it's the worst season she's ever had. You know, I mean, we would dream to have the worst season of Katie Compton, but at the same point, she's holding herself up to her own standard, yet she's made the decision to basically race while living in Europe. And I think it's a plan that works better for them. And I understand that completely. And I think that if you had a system and you had a federation that supported that system where you could set up housing and have people over there for longer stays and make it worthwhile, that would put more Americans up higher in the standings in those races. But that's a huge commitment. I mean, that's leaving your family, leaving your friends, leaving everything, and basically just living overseas full time. Because you look at our, you know, friend of the show, Jens Dekker, and he always says, well, one of the other reasons that the Americans don't do as well is that they're not over here training with us in the summer. They're not racing all of the, basically the kermesses and the stage races that every cyclocross racer does to get that speed work in the summer, and are racing against each other. So, you know, everybody, and you're, you know, all going fast by the time cyclocross season starts. So,
All good points.
Yeah. I think, you know, the one of the things, like you said, Bill, that is worrying is the, you know, you have a governing body who is putting on a series that competes with the other series. Yeah. And that does bug me. That's why I think that's, you know, when people complain, oh, the USA Cycling should do a cyclocross series in the US, I do not think they are the people to, as while it would be great to have a national series in the US again, it should not be run by USA Cycling. It should be run by a third party.
And that's not to say that USA Cycling can't handle it.
They could do it if they want.
I agree exactly with your point, because it's a huge conflict. You can't be the overall governing body of racing if you own a race.
Yeah. So, anyways, all right. Did we cover Frank's question?
All right. I think we're right on for our half hour show.
Yeah, Frank actually has another half of this, which is good too. He says, with the 2019 Pro CX calendar coming to a close, casting aside from the injuries this season, what are your views on the health state of elite cyclocross racing in the U.S.?
In the U.S. Because here's where I would say, in the U.S., it's great. And the parity that we're seeing now is really good for U.S. racing in the U.S. And I'm just speaking of the men in particular, the level that they are at on the world scene, I think it's not what it was or what it could be or should be, personally.
I feel like this has been the most disjointed, weird season that there's been in the U.S. in a long time. I don't know why exactly, but to me, it really feels like this season is all over the place. Nothing feels like It doesn't feel like, you know, you're having the all the top riders, you know, moving around, or even, and on the split weekends we're getting good, you know, good separation of the riders that are in the country. Part of it, I think, like he said, you know, casting aside the injuries, that's a huge, that's hard to do that because that's had such a huge impact on the racing this season. But I think this season has been really strange with just with the way it's happened. I don't know if it's nationals being moved up and it's going to take us a year to adjust to that. But I'm a little concerned about it. I'll be honest.
Bill, yeah, I think you're absolutely right that the, you know, bearing injury part, you really can't. That's hard to do. Part
yeah.
of it. I mean, you know, and it's just how people's seasons go. You know, Tobin was awesome last year, and he struggled all year this year, so he wasn't really in the mix. And then, you know, you have Kerry Werner, who's having a great year, but then again, like, Hyde's out the whole, you know, with the sternum first and then the foot after that. And then mm-hmm. Curtis White steps up, and he has a great season. And that's all awesome. As far as the stories go, that's great. But you are right. There was no real flow or rhythm to the season on the men's side. And then, you know, as we'll talk about with NBX, you know, not to spoil anything, but then Hyde shows up and he's a world beater. You know, mm-hmm. it's just like old Hyde again. So does that mean that we're just going to go back to status quo on that side? It's hard to know what's going to happen. And then also the interesting thing that is happening on the men's side is what we saw in Europe and especially Belgium and the Netherlands a couple years ago, where all of the scary riders, and we're going to see this in nationals, or a lot of them, were not riding in the elite races. They were riding the U23. I'm talking about in Belgium, you know, when you had Wout and you had mm-hmm. Lawrence Swick and you had Matthew Vanderpoel, and they all weren't, you know, up there to scare the then, you know, big boys. They were still racing the U23s, you know, and here we have guys like Gage Hecht, who I think everybody's going to be really happy that he's not racing the elite race at nationals and is in the U23 race. You know,
has he already stated that? Has he registered for that?
I don't, they race Pan Am.
He's registered in the U23.
Yeah. I mean, okay. same with like Lance Hayden, who's won a C1 race and been on podiums this year. There are fast guys that are young guys. Yep. So that makes it fun. That's an interesting thing. And then on the women's side, you know, I think it's really disjointed because, you know, Katie Compton's not here this season. Ellen, mm-hmm. when she was in these races, was winning easily. But then she was having a hard time beating Magli Rochette. Well, Magli would show up sometimes, and that was in Europe, you know, so not always there as well. And Katie Keogh wins a World Cup and then seems to be struggling during these smaller C2 races and really isn't in it. And then she goes to Europe, and then she comes back, but Ellen and Magli aren't there. You know, so it's just...
Exactly what I'm saying.
Exactly. I mean, you're exactly right. Yep. I'm just like, you know, putting a finer point on what you're saying that, it's really hard to get a grasp on what's happening this season. And maybe all of that kind of noise that we're having there and that disjointedness is going to make what we have coming up for nationals that much more exciting because it's a lot of unknowns.
I think it's certainly going to make it more exciting from a racing standpoint, because I think they, as you're talking about with the Europeans, they race against each other all summer and then push each other and train together and race. Now everyone's all over cross results and USA Cycling rankings when they are factual and everything, and like, how will I compare to that person, and what's the weather going to be? I think we have an email about that as well. I think weather's going to be a big factor here. We looked at we haven't even got to talking about MBX yet, did we? When you the sun, a Sunday, a day in the sun on Saturday, and then a very heavy, muddy race, things get really different, and you have people that shine in the sun, whereas some people excel in the mud. So, yeah, let's move on. What do you think?
All right, well, are we done with Frank's question? Frank, look what you started, man. I love it. Great question. But we got to do. We haven't even done day two of resolution yet.
Oh yeah. So do you want to do that? Yeah.
Let's do that really quick. I can't remember what I did first, so we'll just do the men first. In first place was Gage Hecht again. Second place, Drew Dillman again. Third place was Cody Kaiser. Fourth place was Michael Vandenham, and fifth place was Brandon Fix. So pretty similar top five right there. Gage taking the win again by about 8 seconds. So over Drew. All right. Anything you guys want to mention
Tyler
about
Cloutier?
That? Where was Tyler?
Arcadian.
I missed it.
10th place. Where? He gets
10th place. He gets that 1 point. Good for you, Tyler. Sorry I missed that. Man,
no,
oh, man.
I'm so excited. I texted him this morning.
But shooting over to the women in Texas. In first place was Katie Klaus. Second place, Courtney McFadden. Third place, Raylan Nuss. Fourth place, Lily Williams. Fifth place, Hannah Ahrensman. So Katie Klaus getting a C2 win at age 17. That's good to see. But with 7 seconds win over Courtney by the official time there. So, yeah, I think that covers the Texas race. What do you guys think?
Yeah, former Michigander and Ann Arbor Velo Club regular, although member of the Racing Greyhounds, Ellie Stern in 20th place both days.
All right. Good job, Ellie. Let's read the day one of NBX, shall we? And then we'll maybe do another question, Bill.
Sure.
All right. First in day one for NBX GP of cyclocross in Warwick. In first place, I'm going to do the men first. In first place was Stephen Hyde. Second place, Curtis White. Third place, Kerry Werner. Fourth place, Spencer Petroff. And in fifth place, Jack Kisseberth. Go, Bill, you want to tell us about this? You were there, right?
I was there. Yeah. My first time at NBX. Great venue, great event, you know, professionally run, which is what you'd expect from NECX, and did not disappoint on that level as well. And this was a really interesting race to watch. This was a fun one. If you actually have a recap already up for this, Cyclocross Television on YouTube, just go to SCX Airs on our YouTube and it's there. But the story here, I'm going to spoil my video now, was the return of Stephen Hyde, and a lot of questions going into nationals, a lot of people who have already done their predictions about who's going to win nationals, and Hyde was really an unknown factor. But he showed up to this race, and basically it was him and his teammate Curtis White. Curtis White is the leader of the Victoria New England Cyclocross Series, was undefeated in that series until this weekend, mm-hmm. and is still just head and shoulders above anybody else in the field. And he took off, and Hyde got on his wheel, and he basically was like, it was what he needed. That was like the motor pacing session that he needed just to sort of kickstart him and get him back into race pace. And he, during the race, was telling Curtis, he was like, you are so strong right now. It was like, just go. And, you know, I don't know if that's savvy veteran move or what, but
go, and then I'm going to go around you right at the end.
Eventually. But those two were just drilling it for mm-hmm. pretty much the whole race. And what that did was that it put them over a minute up on third place, which was Kerry Werner.
Yeah, they were over a minute 15. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which Carrie, is a huge gap.
Kerry's a guy, you know, admittedly does not like those heavy pedaling sections. You know, that is not his mm-hmm. forte. He's a technical rider. He's able to make up time when things are, you know, when there are a lot of tricky turns and technical bits in there, and that's really where he excels. So I think there was a lot, especially on a dry day, it was going to be a tough going for him. And, you know, he hasn't been able to figure out Curtis White yet. You know, you throw Steven back mm-hmm. in there and it's a whole different story. But this was really, really, really promising to see as far as Hyde goes. You know, I mean, he took his recovery seriously. He wanted to come in here ripping and did just that. And then,
well, I saw on your video, Bill, of Hyde trying to shoulder check that concrete wall. So I think his sternum is okay. I mean, I think he thought the wall was going to move when he checked that thing.
Yeah, like, he was definitely putting that wall in his place. The funny thing was he kept doing that. Like every time he was one of the only people who was riding that where everybody else was running. And, mm-hmm. you know, he would kind of bounce off the wall and push it just to keep his balance through the whole thing.
Gotcha.
The fun battle, Werner and Petrov had a nice battle in there too. But then if you look down at fifth and sixth, that was the really fun one to watch. That pairing between Kisebirth and Sam Knoll. Sam Knoll is I think there were two younger male riders that came out of, you know, nowhere basically this year. And David, I know you were talking about one of them, Andrew Strohmeyer, last week.
Right, yep.
I think Sam Knoll has to be the other one.
Sure.
I mean, he is having a year, and I think he's a name that really people aren't familiar with. But he won the series, the Vittoria series, and was, you know, it took Jack a while to get rid of him during this race. I mean, they were pretty much wheel to wheel that whole time.
Yeah, I think Sam is definitely one of the juniors to look for nationals for sure. So,
and that brings us right around to what we were saying before, how the U.S. is kind of suffering. Well, maybe not so much in the men's side. Maybe we do have a future.
Yep, hope so.
We'll see.
Jeremy Power down there in eighth place. I think he was satisfied with that ride. You know, that's he's another guy who's still coming back. I think where Powers is that he has nationals in mind, and he still wants to win another national title. So this is 2 weeks before nationals. He wasn't in it to win it for this race.
It's training as much as anything.
Yeah, yeah. He had this training block down in New Mexico, Arizona, and this is kind of still building on that, and then it's building up until nationals. So, you know, we were writing him off last year, and he came in there and
look
gave,
what happened.
And gave Hyde all he could handle. So I wouldn't write him off yet this year either.
And we just need to double mention the return of Spencer Petrov. So
yeah, he looks strong. He looks strong.
See what happens. Yeah. I agree. And just like you were saying with Kerry, this is not That's not Spencer's course either.
Yeah.
Right. That's not built for his skill set. So just to do what he did is good, and we'll see what happens. So,
and that's another, right. That's another guy that we're talking about that these guys don't want in their nationals race.
Right.
Because he's a U23.
Yeah.
Look at that first seven. Three of the first seven U23 riders in that men's
field. Yep.
All right. Yep. The women.
All right. Switching over to the women. First place was Katie Keogh. Second place, Rebecca Ferringer. Third place, Ruby West. Fourth place, Arlie Kemmerer. Fifth place, Caroline Mani. Tell us about it, Bill.
Yeah, let's go down to sixth place as well. Regina Legg has had a really good year up there. Name maybe not as people aren't as familiar with, but she's had a really good season. As far as the win goes, and Katie Keogh, she kind of had it figured out early. Got the whole shot. I think had about a 10-second lead after the first lap, had about a 30-second lead after the next lap, had about a minute lead after the next lap. And
also wins by well over a minute.
Yeah,
so.
and minute 19 gap between her and second place. And she's, you know, if Katie is the most underspoken person to her meet, especially about her own accomplishments. And, you know, she just said, well, she hadn't raced with this field in a while and was in Europe and came back and wasn't really sure where everybody was. She really didn't have any plan to go ride on her own, but sort of found herself out there in the front and was figured, well, what the heck, and decided just to keep going solo. And I think as strategy goes on this course and on this day, that was a successful one.
Yeah, it was hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
It really seemed to work for her.
Becca Farringer, who actually didn't have the best start, was back a little, you know, dropped back probably about fifth, sixth place, was already giving up some time to that leading group. She's just a diesel, you know, and she is just able to work her way back up through a field, found herself in second place, had a little bit of a battle with Ruby West for a bit, but was able to ride away from her, you know, about two-thirds of the way through the race and get second place. And then the really fun battle in that race was between third and fourth place with Ruby West and Arlie Kemmerer. And they really went back and forth. Arlie,
yeah, only 5 seconds separating them.
And Arlie looked really good. And that 5 second gap was one that both of them had at some point. Like Arlie was able to, you know, to drop Ruby for a little while. Ruby would fight back, get back to Arlie, and they'd switch it up. And even coming up the finishing stretch, Arlie was closing it down to about a second or two. And then I think the 5 seconds just came from her realizing she wasn't going to make it back to her and sat up right at the end. But yeah, that was that made the race exciting, you know, and it sort of goes back to why we love cyclocross as opposed to other disciplines where we're still watching it for those races, and they were good ones.
Yeah. Sounds cool. Sounds like a great event. So, all right, Bill, do we want to do another question and mix them in here before we do the second day of NBX, or do we want to finish off NBX?
Yeah, let's just finish up NBX, and I think we'll go into our nationals. I think the rest of our questions are pretty much...
we'll fit them in there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so the second day of NBX, go back to the elite men. In first place was Stephen Hyde. Second place, Kerry Werner. Third place, Curtis White. Fourth place, Spencer Petroff. And fifth place, Jeremy Powers. Who you just mentioned. I think on social media he was saying that fifth place, he was very happy with that. As you say, and Kerry Werner, is this the first time he's beaten Curtis in the series?
I think so. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think you're right. So he had to feel good about that. So how was that, Bill? Tell us about that day.
Completely different day. And David had mentioned it before in that you had a sunny kind of tacky conditions with a long beach run on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Sunday, they pretty much removed the beach. You were on it for literally a second. You just sort of did a little U-turn in the sand and then went back out, which is kind of funny since this is a beach race, you know, that's sort of the marquee feature of this venue. And it was pouring down rain all day long. I did not go and take in any of the amateur races or any of the local flavor of the NBX on Sunday. I was editing and in my hotel room until about 45 minutes before the women's start, and finally I was like, all right, put on all my rain gear and
wrapped up the cameras
and bags and then headed out there. And it was something. The women
were you playing your rain gear games?
Yes. Thank you.
Sorry, it's the season.
The women...
Your rain gear games.
Yeah, very good. Wow. The women had it worse as far as the rain went. You know, it was definitely pouring during their race. And then it actually stopped during the men. Or it got to the point where it was like raining so lightly that it was still raining, yet it was raining so heavily before that you thought it had stopped. It was like...
Yes, we all have been there. Yes.
But it definitely changed the whole feel of the race. It's a race that's not that... You know, the line on is it, even if it rains, there's so much sand mixed into the soil that it's not going to get muddy. That point I think was disproven during Sunday's races, where there was definitely some mud sections, but at the same time it still was like some really wet mud in that it was not clinging to components. It wasn't clinging to tires. Mm-hmm. I think there were so many puddles and so much water on the course that tires were staying clean the whole lap. So it was more just being able to negotiate the mud, especially on the climbs. If you've ridden cyclocross, you know about that. If you didn't have all of your weight going back on these climbs, your back wheel is just spinning. You know, so it was really a lot of being able to handle that momentum, being able to handle the momentum going into the climbs, or else you're dismounting and getting off. You dismount, you know, the 10 people behind you are dismounting as well. It's that type of race. And I think that seeing Werner up there in second, like we talked about, does not fit his strengths that happened on Saturday. This was more in line with what he's able to do. And he was able to stick with Hyde most of the race.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Do you want to do the women's results? First place, Katie Keough. Second place, Ruby West. Third place, Becca Farringer. Fourth place, Magdalene Valliers-Mill. And in fifth place, Crystal Anthony.
Yeah, good race for Crystal. I think that, you know, she was, it's sort of interesting. I think that I didn't talk to her to see what happened, but she was really up there fighting for the podium on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then fell back a little towards the end. So it was good to see her up there. And yeah, Katie Keough still is just the exact same thing. And I honestly don't think that she was pushing that hard on
Sunday.
And
she still won by a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just so smooth. She's one of those, David, where it really doesn't matter what the conditions are. You know, yeah. We saw that in
that's true.
Iowa City, right?
Yeah, that's going to be my point. She thrived in it in Iowa.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good point. She's good in everything. So, all right. So, well, anything else to wrap that up? Though?
So wet conditions on a hilly course.
Little.
That she does well at. That could that could be a good segue into our next topic.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what do you want to talk about? What is the next topic?
Well, if I look at the syllabi.
We're going to talk about, do you want to just mention really quick what we got coming up? Of course, this weekend is Ruts and Guts, right? That's a C1 in Broken Arrow and the North Carolina GP in Hendersonville. So those are both coming up this coming weekend.
And I think that both of those races are going to experience weather.
That's going to be good.
Yeah, I think there may even be snow at both of them. We'll see. Ooh. But definitely.
And you are going to be attending Ruts and Guts, correct,
I'll be at Ruts
Bill?
And Guts. Super excited to go see it.
That's one on my list, and I wish I was getting out there for that, but can't do it. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I am leaving home on Friday, and then I'll be gone until the week
after Nats.
The week from Tuesday. Yeah, after we have
So cyclocross friends, if any of you could go by and feed the cats.
Yeah, exactly.
Bill would and appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and then on the 15th of December is the next one of the series we talk about, which is the next DeVeve. And that is Shell DeCrosse. And I believe it's not till like December 23rd, I believe, is the next World Cup, which is no May.
Yeah.
Am I right? I think so.
One interesting note about Ruts and Guts in Hendersonville, you know, Ruts and Guts is a C1, Hendersonville is a C2, that maybe just because it's later season. If you look, at least on the men's side, if you look at the. Once we get the start list this coming weekend from Ruts and Guts versus Hendersonville, I think it's going to be hard to figure out which one's the C1.
Oh,
I think you're probably going to be, I think you're probably right. A lot of the East Coast riders are going to stay there,
mm-hmm.
do the C2 and then just head to Nationals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that will be a popular thing. Some will go, I think, you know, but, I think that's a really good point. I think it's going to be a very, very split up field there in the U.S. next weekend. So, yeah, good call. All right.
So maybe we need fewer C1s in the U.S. And we can.
I was
going
to say we can just loop it back to the beginning of our conversation.
There we go.
To bring it full circle.
This time I did it on purpose. It wasn't that I just wasn't paying attention.
But the week after this weekend, we have Cyclocross Nationals, you guys. It's here already. It seems like the season just started, right?
Kind of did.
Wasn't it just like last week that we were at,
the
Rochester?
Alma GP?
The Alma GP. It was crazy. but we wanted to just do a little preview stuff to talk about.
I remember being at Go Cross and being dehydrated and being 92 degrees out. That doesn't seem like yesterday.
No.
But let's just talk about the course a little bit. Bill, you did a great write-up on the Crosshairs website comparing this course to the one that was in Louisville last year. And I think it's a great comparison. If people get a chance, get over to the website and check that out. It's really cool because you can compare the maps. You got the maps right next to each other, and you can really see the differences. But one of the things we want to mention on the course is, for people that were there, all that stuff over by the tennis area is all gone.
Yeah.
right? I remember us saying at the, after Louisville last year, I think you were saying Stu Thorne was standing at the edge of that bowl and saying, man, the whole race should be over here.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what they've done, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like in our lesson plan, you have the map that you got from my website, which looks like the official map from USA Cycling.
But not quite.
What's that?
So, but not quite.
Not quite, which I like, because I've seen this out there, and I always like to see, you know, who's borrowing it from my site. I figure that's a good sign that they're going there first and they're doing their own previews. Right. But I added a couple extra things onto that map, so it's
Like, what did you add? The old start grid?
Yeah, just the stuff in orange.
Yeah, so that's helpful. I mean, yeah. The start, one of the issues was where the start was, right? The announcers couldn't even see any of the course, and now it's in a completely different area where they can actually see things. So that's a very big improvement.
Announcers still can't see in the course.
You can't see. Who are the announcers, by the way?
for the live stream on Sunday, it's going to be Brad Soner, Tim Johnson, and Meredith Miller. So all voices that we are all familiar and comfortable with listening to. And then live at the event at Joe Creason Park is going to be myself playing third wheel to Scott and Julie Herman.
Mr. and Mrs. Voice of American Cyclocross.
I was going to say it, David, and I didn't even have to.
No, on cue.
You
I'm
just
here,
said
man.
It.
I'm here for you.
I will say, to go back to what you were saying, Scott, it is a valid point. Where the announcers were and where the start was so far away from any of the action that you really were isolated out there for Pan Am last year. The move now, the start and the finish and the announcers and all of the officials are in a spot that I was joking, you know, you can see a little bit of the course, but what we also can do, and with wireless microphones, is it's a 2-second walk to the back of the sort of the main structure, this mansion that the Park Service has their offices in. And on the backside of that is where all the fun stuff is. You know, that's where your chute is. That's where your limestone stairs are. That's where your heavy climbs that we're going to talk about. All of that stuff is like right there in that bowl that you were mentioning earlier.
One of the areas where I think we're going to see crowds form is the sand pit, because the sand pit is in the team parking area.
Yes, it is.
I think that is going to be like an area that attracts a lot of spectating and people that are just there, teams that are there, other riders that are there. It's going to be very natural to just wander over to that sand pit and watch people come through it. So I think that's kind of a really cool feature.
It is going to be really cool. And if you go and look at the pictures that I have of it before there's even any sand in it at on cxairs.com, you can see that it is it's in the foundation. There used to be this huge building that this.
It
barn.
Looks like an old swimming pool. It looks like an old. They filled an old swimming pool with sand.
Yeah. So now it's sort of in that foundation, the crawl space of that old building that they knocked down. So it is about a 4-foot wall on two sides of the sand pit that people are going to be standing on and cheering. You know, or at least Nero will probably be taped off a little bit. And it is just going to be this wall of sound. And you're right. That's where the food is going to be, the vendors, the team parking. So all of your pro teams will be there. Your food will be there. Your beer will be there. That's going to be the party zone. And yeah, you're absolutely right, Scott. That's going to be where people are going to head to. And it's going to be. And the other thing is that it is going to be a legit sand section. It's none of these. Yeah. We're just throwing down, you know, a couple bags of sand.
5 inches of sand.
Yeah, this is dump trucks full of sand that are going to be down there, and you are exiting 4 feet higher than you're entering.
Yeah. So think of it, if you're a non-pro racer, think of it as this is your audition. This is your chance to make a pro team, because they're all going to be sitting there watching you come through. No pressure.
Nope.
But you better rail
the
sand.
What if we gave these guys just a little taste of Coke Cider and we'll evaluate them and see if we want to send them over to Europe.
Stu Thorne will be sitting there, standing there with a clipboard.
Right, exactly. And a stopwatch.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm glad they did not change is the pit. Where the pit was, I think, mm-hmm. is a perfect area for a pit to be with a huge... I think they installed 4 hydrants at the one end of the pit.
Yep.
For the race there last year. I'm assuming that's going to continue on, and that was beautiful. I mean, that is
basically
World Cup level pit. So.
And you know what they're adding to that, Scott? Because this is what I love about this event, especially, you know...
A porta potty.
Oh, maybe. I'm assuming, yes.
One thing,
the biggest, you know, we already talked about the start. They knew the start was... Everybody complained about the start. They knew it was in the wrong place. They listened. They changed it.
Yep. Yep.
Remember the mud feature that was created?
Because of the water draining onto the course?
Yep.
Yeah.
They're building boxes for all of those spigots those hydrants that they installed, and then mm-hmm. filling it with gravel.
Nice.
So that to try to avoid having that same problem, which is pretty cool too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, one thing we got to say is, you know, they did take some of the criticism that they came from last year. It's good. Now we see why a test event is very important, because
sure.
I think this is a much improved course over what we saw there last year. I just think there's no two ways about it. The parking situation is still the zoo parking. I still see in the tech guide, no tents in the zoo parking. So that is what it is.
You know, there is a, if you see, you know, we were talking about the sand pit and the team parking, right next to that is a huge area that's 10 by 10 tent area.
Yeah.
Which isn't hugely expensive. So if you have a team, you know, you buy that. Here's the deal. You go into a national championship, you go into this national level event, you're going to have to spend a couple bucks.
Yes, I think for nationals, it's a little bit different story for sure.
Yeah, there's no way around it. You know,
that's why I don't mind paying $20 either just to get in for the week. I think that's very reasonable.
And this is another change. There was a lot of criticism about the zoo staff being extremely heavy-handed on people parking last year. Mm-hmm. And the Louisville Sports Commission basically bought the parking lot for the week.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for that, and now you don't have to pay to park. In exchange for that, you have to pay $20 to get into the event for the week.
For the week. But the parking is free, so,
parking
you know.
Is free, $20 one-time fee to get in there. I'm sorry. I think that is completely reasonable.
I totally agree. I mean,
they always charge to get into nationals, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that just Scotty D telling me that when we go? Dave, no. you gotta pay up, Mr. David Pound.
Then I
every
pocket
year.
Your $15.
That's what I figured. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, I think it was Reno was $15, right? I mean,
I think it was. I think Reno was $15.
Yeah, so it's $5 more.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I don't have a.
Not going to complain about that one.
It's not like it's 50 or something, you know, something like that. So.
Yeah, I think the cool thing that I'm really looking forward to for this course is just how it is going to ride. I think that we are going to have a little bit of weather, and that's actually let me just squeeze in one of our questions here. This is from Scott, and he says, am I right, the Louisville course will be super heavy if wet? Was that the case last year when they did the event there? He said, I just checked the long-term forecast, and it's showing rain during the week leading up to the elite races. And yes, you know, I think people in the elite field were calling it the hardest race they did all year long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that was because it had rained, and because there are these long power climbs on this track, and when it's wet, they are that much harder, and I think it is going to be a slog, and you are going to have people really hurting in these races. And that was the point that I was going to get to. If you look at the map, when you're coming back home, especially in these last couple laps, I mean, one place where people are going to be I think mapping out to make moves are on the last long power climb that gets mm-hmm. you up towards the pits, and then you make the mm-hmm. right turn, and then it's really, we always talk about the sprint before the sprint. So this mm-hmm. is something that wasn't there last year, is that the flyover goes over this entrance road to the park. Last year, you could drive up and down that road. This year, it's closed off, and the race actually goes under the flyover down that road. So a good 100, 200-meter stretch that's just flat and straight and is 20 seconds before the finish.
Yeah.
So you sprint down there. You make
and then there's barriers.
You make a right turn, and then right before the finish line, right before you make a left turn for the finish, there's a set of planks.
Yeah.
And this, David, is when we talk about is where that riding barriers, hopping barriers, is no longer a novelty, but a necessary skill.
Yep.
This is kind
there
of
it is.
This is the blueprint.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I think that's a great call. I think that are you calling that as that's where you're going to win or lose the race, Bill, you think?
I think where the race, the place to look at where the race will be won or lost, I imagine that the attack will come on that hill.
Yeah, in the lead up, as we saw with Louisville, right? I mean, with Indy.
You mean the hill before the pit?
Correct.
Yeah.
If the group, if anybody is able to, if that attack doesn't work, then it's going to be the first one to the barriers wins.
Yep.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that's a good, yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be a good call. I think you're right. That climb was, you know, man, that it was so tough last year. Remember, that's the race where Powers was having the,
yeah,
the heart,
the heart problem, yeah. You know, because yeah. everybody was just working so hard on those climbs, and if you look at the map, you can see the topographic lines, how, you know, tight they are, right in that area down there, and that's just going to be, yeah, that's going to be some work to get through. And I think if it's wet and heavy, like you said, it's going to make it that much more difficult.
I think
what did he say? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the other big difference on the track that we haven't talked about is that last year there was this kind of death-defying chute, this descent.
The descent,
It was nuts. And there is, so it was basically straight down, pretty big drop, and then in the middle of it there's this asphalt walking path that bisects mm-hmm. the course, and on the other side of the walking path, it was pretty much just a straight drop. And you came in there with so much speed, and then people were flying off that drop, and then they had to make this quick right turn that it truly was. You had a lot of people who were just like grabbing brake the whole way and just did not have the nerve. I would have been one of them to sort of take that at speed. And then the people who did, you know, the Katie Comptons and the Stephen Hydes of the world, who were just like, yeehaw, and off they went, won races. This year, yeah. they've decided to tone that down a little bit. So about halfway down that drop, it makes a right turn and then does a little U-turn and then comes back on itself and then goes back down. So they almost put this limiter in there, this little off camber in the middle of it to sort of, so everybody has to scrub speed and then do the rest of it.
Yeah. I think all this, and we haven't even mentioned a place where a lot of people are going to gather, is the limestone stairs. That whole little area in there is going to be a huge spectator area. And if you, at the top of those stairs and off to the side a little bit, all you got to do is walk across that little parking lot and you're at the finish line.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that's going to be a very popular place to go and watch these races.
And we talk about that often, that if you're a spectator, I mean, we always talk about the racers should go and pre-ride the course, but as a spectator, you should also go out and pre-plan your spectator course, right?
Yeah,
your
route.
Where it is you can go see them pass here and then turn around and go see some other exciting portion of the course as well. And now, Scotty D, I think you gave away the big secret one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this, you can, you know, much like, when I was in Belgium watching the Tour of Flanders, and you know, you were able to, I didn't know where we were going, but a big crowd of people just, you know, after the bunch went by, just all started sprinting across this farmer's field, and me and my buddies were like, well, we should go
follow them.
We should follow them. And then we were, you know, we're on some other cobbled climb, and there they were 5 minutes later, and we were like, this is awesome.
Oh.
So you can do the same thing on this course in that you can see them come through the pits, pit one, drop down. You can watch them almost without taking 30 steps, watch them come up over the limestone steps, drop back down again, and then boogie around the building, which is only another 20-second walk, and watch the finish.
Yeah.
So you can actually see almost the entire final. You won't be able to see the sand or that half of the course, but as far as the pivotal moments of the end of a race, it's pretty neat because you can see the last 3 minutes of the race, the entire thing.
Sure. All right. Well, does anything else we want to mention about the course? Are we ready to wrap that up? I think it's going to be, I think it's improved for sure, I think. And I'm excited to go watch some races on it.
Yeah.
You guys?
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. We have an anonymous question email. Anonymous emailer. Yeah. This one I'm saying is for David. What would it take for Kerry Werner to win nationals?
I don't, you know, because I was looking. I'm doing some analysis, right? Still hasn't beaten Hyde. And Werner versus Hyde, and then who else?
White.
He has not beat White. Yeah. Curtis White's like 8-0 against. He's like maybe 7-1, 6-1 against Werner and Petrov. He's 8-0 against Petrov.
Werner won at Charm City. Pretty sure Curtis was there.
Yeah, so that's where the one was, right? So, and while Charm City had some mud sections to it, it's not the kind of heavy mud I think that we are likely to see. And all of this is all predicated on how does the course set up? I don't see Kerry Werner beating Hyde. I don't see it. Early in the season, obviously, it was you know, Hyde is out. Hyde, you know, is just a season-ending injury. Even as early as Waterloo, there was that thought. And then with the ankle later on. But as you said, it almost forced rest on him that may have paid dividends. He didn't get over to Europe to race and get sick or jet lagged or tired from doing that. He managed to stay and concentrate in, you know, that Western Massachusetts little mecca of cyclocross that it has become. He managed to do some serious training, and he's going to be tough to beat.
Yep.
Sorry. All right, I guess I didn't answer the question of what will it take for
Werner.
No,
it's okay, because a friend of the show, Elliot, and a co-host of the KDF podcast, has some more stats to throw at you, Scott, about this exact same question, okay? So he lets us know that his question is basically top three favorites for the men's elite are Hyde, White, and Werner. And what conditions do White and Werner need to beat Hyde? And then he gives us some background, which is Werner was fourth at Creason for Pan Ams last year, 3 minutes behind Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
White won Pan Ams in 2016 for U23, but that was at DeVoe, and had a bad day at Derby City day one in 2017 at Creason, finishing 11th. So what's it going to take? And we just saw Hyde at NBX just dominate. So I don't think we can say still coming back from injury, fitness might not be there. You know, we're just talking regular old, you know, two-time champ, best in the country, Stephen Hyde. What is it going to take for Werner or White or somebody else down the line to knock him off the top step?
I think it's basically going to take a perfect day for them, right? I mean, they're going to have everything go right. and maybe have other riders get into a little bit of difficulty in some areas, right? They're going to have areas where they are significantly faster on the course, that they've got something going on, line-wise, that's just works out faster for them. They're going to have their day is basically it, you know, for either one of those two to beat Hyde, I think, and to beat the other one, right? I think, to me, Gary and Curtis is a pretty even match. Even though Curtis has won the majority of the times head-to-head this season, I think when you put them together for a single day at Nationals, I think they're pretty evenly matched. That said, I think they're both a step behind Hyde after this weekend. I don't know if I would have said that before this weekend. So I think either one of them is going to have basically the perfect day. Everything hit just right. Everything go right. The bike's working well. No mechanicals, no mistakes. And that's what it's going to take for them to win, to beat Hyde.
I think it needs to be a combination of that, Scott, and Hyde having something go wrong.
Well, or even not just go wrong, but just not have a good day. You know, he could just maybe not feel well or something. You know, he just, it's, things just aren't right for him. Maybe he's, maybe
concerns
he had a just
about the
perfect
Middle East
day
or something like that. Yeah, I'm with you.
Right, exactly. that's a Breaking Away reference, right?
Exactly.
There,
there you go. Yeah. Thank you.
So, anyways, yeah, I think that's what it's going. What about you, Bill? What do you think?
Well, let me ask you this, and maybe this was answered at NBX, but let's go back to Kings, where we're looking at similar conditions that we'll probably see 90 miles down the road in Louisville, right?
If at least wet, the first day, for sure. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And what happened to Hyde that day? Do you remember?
Not off the top of my head, no.
He couldn't stay on his bike.
Oh, well, that was, yeah.
Sliding all over the place. Wheels weren't hooking up. Right? Tires weren't
hooking up.
Tires weren't hooking up at all.
Was that an issue? Yeah.
But
well,
that's the
thing.
Thinking,
that fitness, you know, that's
but
not,
it wasn't an issue at NBX, but I think they're different conditions.
Yeah.
So, right? Wouldn't you say that Kings is closer to what ground condition they'll see in Pan Ams versus this sort of sandy dirt that they were racing on in NBX?
Well, this would be my guess from a mechanic point of view, and after what happened.
Yeah, I'm with you on this.
Cincy,
yes.
I do not think that tire situation is going to be allowed to happen again.
I believe
you're
correct. Yeah, because
I kind of assumed that was going to be the case.
But here's the thing. Now here's the thing. Werner was in the exact same boat.
Uh huh.
He had almost an identical day where he could not stay on his bike. He actually handled it much better, and we talked about those handling skills, but he was like riding a Bronco out there a lot of the times, and one hand up in the, or a bull and one hand up in the air and his foot out and trying to just keep the
as
keep
did
the bike
Katie
under him.
Keel.
Yeah.
As did Katie Keel.
Yeah, yeah.
Same situation. Yeah.
So I think that you are right in that there are going to be equipment changes that are going to take place for both the Cannondale team and then also the Kona team. And what I find interesting is that both of those teams have big tire sponsors.
Yeah. Have you heard anything on that front?
I haven't, but my guess would be, not to call anybody out on either of those teams, is that there are going to be riders possibly and some Sharpies and they're going to be out there to win.
You have some stickers that say one tire brand on it, that bring them with you because somebody may be willing to buy them to stick on the tires.
What we have to hope as consumers, and the reason that companies sponsor bike teams and cyclocross teams is that they want to show off their tires, is that it will maybe push these companies to develop a tire that can handle mud.
Yeah, Maybe, maybe it will.
Or maybe wet.
Which would be a which would probably be a useful thing for cyclocross.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
If not you so want to support cyclocross, you should probably have that in your. And I know one of these companies thought they had that tire, but it doesn't seem like it's it's really panning out that way.
Yeah.
So that was just an interesting point that, you know, we did see these riders under those conditions and it didn't go well. But I think you're exactly right, Scott and David, that situation is not going to repeat itself because that equipment change will right. have happened.
Right.
Yeah.
And then if it does, I mean, and then if it doesn't, it could not be muddy. Right. And then that problem isn't even there. And it would still be. I still, you know, it'd take a perfect day by those other two, I think, to beat Hyde or to beat the other one too. That but one of them's going to have to,
you know, if we're doing predictions, it sounds like you all are, we're all kind of in the same boat here. I think I don't see anybody. I see Hyde winning. I think I see Hyde winning.
Yeah.
As number
Me
three.
Too.
And
Me
I
too.
So wanted to be able to in good faith, say Drew Dillman's going to take it, and I wish him the best of luck. But I just don't see it happening.
He's like a wild card in there, right?
He's there's going to be wild cards. I have two columns, right? My head predictions and my wild cards, and he's my big wild card.
Yeah, he's good for sure.
Yeah,
I mean he's beaten Curtis at Pan Ams, right? For U23 Pan Ams.
That is
a couple years ago. So,
and he was going great before he decided to. Punch that barrier.
Break his hand.
Yeah.
So
Vanderhaar.
Did we want to look at the calendar at all? The only thing I wanted to mention on the calendar is people, if you look late in the day on Saturday, 4:15 PM, the collegiate 4x4 lap team relay. If you've never seen a relay, come and check it out. If you're there, it's late in the day. As always, the excitement is always very high for that event. It is so much fun to see. It was a great event in Reno last year, and I'm sure on this course it's going to be a great event again. So 4:15 Saturday. If you're around there, go check that out.
And
you guys
going
to be there?
Is it just collegiate this time on Saturday, or is that the mixed open?
That is the collegiate.
Okay, because they have a mixed open one, which was also very exciting last year as well.
Yes, it was. That you're right. That was a really good relay.
That one featured the stair waltz with Amanda and Dave Oshiko.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Does it? I haven't noticed if they're having that again this year.
I'm pretty sure I saw one. Like I said, I don't have the schedule here open in front of me, but okay. I'm pretty sure they do.
Well, either way, any relay race is great, and that collegiate one is going to be really fun. So,
yeah, I think between that race and the single speed race, those may be the two biggest non kind of elite races that get the big crowds.
True, because you're going to have the women and men's single speed races right before that. Women starting at 2:25, men starting at 3:20. So that's just going to be a great way to end off Saturday right there. So, check that out if you get a chance. So,
all right.
Anything else schedule-wise you guys wanted to touch on?
No, but let's. Okay. I think we covered the men, so we should just stick with Elliot's email, and then let's jump into the women's elite.
Sure.
All right. So his question, if Katie Compton doesn't win her 15th straight, which is a big if, who will be the dethroner, and could it be someone other than Keo or Noble? I have this feeling that Courtney McFadden is peaking at the right time, and she was fourth at Creason last year for Pan Am's, third American, as bronze went to Crystal Frere Brunner. So
I think.
What are your thoughts on the women's
I think
elite?
if it's not Big Katie, it's Little Katie, especially if it's muddy.
Yes.
If it's not muddy, then I think Ellen has a better chance. Ellen has a chance no matter what.
Yes,
don't get me wrong.
Yep.
Ellen has a chance no matter what, but I think if it's muddy, that favors Little Katie a little bit. And I would give her the edge if you can't pick Compton. And if it's not one of the two of them, man, I don't, That's a that's
I'm going to throw
one.
This out there.
Yeah.
Crystal Anthony had a banger weekend, and she's been racing really well, kind of low under the radar a little bit. That's, again, with my heart, probably a little more than my head, but Crystal Anthony could be the one. And you know who else? Who's a runner, and I'm just throwing this out there, and again, always with my heart, Sonny G.
Yeah, yeah. Bill, any thoughts?
I just don't think at this point we've seen anything, and I know he said her accepted, but I just have to put out there anything to believe that Katie Compton isn't going to win. That's to start with. For instance, she's second in the UCI standings right now.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
She says she's having the worst year of her career, and she's second.
Yeah.
She rode until her eyes were bleeding the other day. Yeah,
literally.
Literally.
You know who's... And also, she's second, and the stodgy Europeans can't say, well, that's because she got all of her points in the U.S. because she's been racing in Europe.
Yep.
In third, however, is Katie Keogh, and this is in the world. Mm-hmm. So first in the world is Sonny Kant, then Katie Compton, and then Katie Keogh. And then Ellen Noble's down there in 12th. So I think, yeah, those are definitely your three legit favorites.
Contenders, yeah.
The next, if you're looking just at UCI rankings, the next highest ranked American, Ellie Anderson. There's your wild card, because she has not raced in the U.S. at all, except for early season. So that's one to look out for. And then after that's Farringer. I think
Ellie Anderson is a good, that's a good point.
Yeah,
I thought of her.
I think that you are right in that the mud may be a factor, you know, just going on Iowa City where just put it all together. And even what we saw at NBX, she just excels in those conditions. You know, that's where she sort of comes out. But the other thing about Katie Keogh, for somebody who we look at as always being so consistent, this has to be her most inconsistent year that we've seen her. I mean, there are some races that she just doesn't look like she's on a good day, and that's happened more than it hasn't, especially in these U.S. races. So I don't know where she's at as far as that, but if she was building toward nationals, she looks pretty darn good right now. And then
I think
go
ahead. I was just gonna say, I think it might have a little bit to do with nerves for Katie Keogh. I think if she can control being nervous, she does so much better. But I think for some reason at U.S. Nationals, there is tons of pressure on her. She feels the pressure at Nationals. And while there's pressure on her for every race, it's not as focused of a thing, say, at a Jingle Cross World Cup, right? It's not as focused of a thing on Katie Keogh. Yeah, yeah. Whereas now on U.S. Nationals, there's a lot of focus on Katie Keogh.
Yeah.
I think that makes it more difficult for anybody to you know, try and ignore that pressure as much. So I think it for her, it comes down to, can she control those nerves? Can she control that pressure and still go out and do well? And I think that's why she fluctuates a lot or has this season. So
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
I will say along those same lines, although I don't think it's as much nerves, I think that Ellen Noble's success is going to depend on the first 3 seconds of the race. And
that's a good point. That's a really good point.
If she is in second or third spot off those first couple turns, her chances of winning everything go up exponentially.
Yeah.
Because once she gets up there, no matter what the conditions, she just has a way of hanging on and being there. And you're right. It's the kind of course that if it's not messy, if it's not rainy, if it's just dry, it's just the right amount of power climbs to really play into her strengths.
Yeah.
I think on a non-muddy course, I would agree with that. I think on a muddy course, I think she could still they could still catch her. I think she has a tendency to not be as in control in the muddy races. We see her running off her line that it looks like she wants to ride more often than say like Keo does, or of course Compton. I mean, Compton's a master. So I think it could still happen. I think in a dry race, I think you're right. If she's in the lead after the first few turns in dry conditions, she's going to be hard to catch for sure. I think if it's a muddy conditions, they have a chance to catch her if that happens.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that, you know, in Pan Am where she just, you know, it's just loss of concentration or whatever else, you know, trying to make that pass at the wrong time and hitting a post and, you know, basically flipping over handlebars and still being able to hang on for second place, you know, that kind of stuff that, without that, I think it's gonna be good. But that being said, I'll start. I'm not betting against Katie Compton. Not doing it.
Oh, me either. Oh, no. Me either. I'd pick Compton every time. all right. Any more of that question, Bill, or is that one done?
No, I think we nailed that one.
We nailed that one. all right. We were talking about predictions. Do you want to just do predictions?
Yeah.
Without any of these restraints that these questions have been putting on us, just full on, let's do the women first. Do you want to pick a podium or just a winner?
Hey, I think we already all picked a winner, didn't we?
Yeah. Is anybody not picking Katie Compton?
No,
I don't think so. So do you want to pick second and third too, Bill? Go ahead. Pick a top three.
Noble and Keo.
In that order?
I'm going out on a limb.
All right.
And I went Keo Noble.
And I'd go I think I'm gonna go Keo Noble as well. all right. Well, men. Let's pick a winner for the men. I know we've all said Stephen Hyde is still our guy to beat. What's second and third gonna look like? Or pick someone other than Hyde if you think. Are we going with Curtis and Carrie? Just
okay.
In different orders?
I'll go.
Go ahead. Right.
Hyde.
Yeah.
I'm sorry in advance, Curtis. Carrie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm stealing David's. Drew Dillman in third.
Oh!
Mm-hmm. Ouch.
All right.
You hear that, Drew Dillman? I'm putting the pressure on you, buddy. Third. I know you want to win. So
I'm
going to
go Hyde Curtis Carey, I think. As well, I will be pulling for Drew with every part of my being there, but I think that'll be their top three this year.
That's
David.
That's a smart pick.
That's a pretty smart pick, but I'm telling you, here's the winners.
Okay.
It's going to be Hyde, Dillman, Petrov.
Ooh.
Because Dillman and Petrov are going to push each other so hard there.
Racing elite?
Petrov's U23.
No. Yeah. I had him in the elites. Okay. So, yeah, Dillman and Curtis then.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. There we go.
Sorry, Carrie. I like you, man, but...
So who's going to win U23? Let's just pick a winner.
Man, that's a race.
I just did then.
So you're going to go stay with Spencer for that?
I think you got to stay with Spencer because it's his home race, but let me check my notes because they're pretty extensive here. Yeah, Spencer, and then, Bruner and Cooper Wilsey's going to surprise you, too, coming out of Vermont.
He's racing really well.
Yeah.
So what are you picking, Bill?
Gage Hecht.
That's a tough. It's hard to not pick Gage. I think he's certainly the favorite, and I like the Sam Knoll pick too. That's up there too. Any thoughts on juniors? We haven't even mentioned Alex Morton. Mm. He could certainly come in and be a force to be reckoned with for the juniors. Yeah.
Well, in the juniors, I'm going with Strohmeyer, and Nick Carter, and I had Alex Morton as the big question mark because, I mean, we don't know. He hasn't raced in the U.S. much at all.
No, not much at all. Cincy, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And he had some issues like we've been talking about before with the mud. So it's hard to gauge.
Whole team, shall we say, had issues. Was there anything consistent across the whole team? Yeah, okay,
yes.
Never mind.
Yes, yes. And we haven't mentioned Magnus either. Magnus Baxter.
Yeah.
He's in there too. Baxter, yeah, Magnus Sheffield, I mean. So, anyways, any other picks anyone wants to mention, honorable mention or anything like that? Someone that could just come out of nowhere. I think Ellie Anderson is that's a good one.
And while we're just throwing them out there, look for Ryder Utrecht and Jack Zakrajcik in the juniors race. Those kids were racing really well in Indy. I think those are two names that if we don't say them a lot this year, we will be seeing a lot of those kids coming up.
Cool. Bill?
I got no one else.
Do you want to do any more questions?
We cover? Can do that. Well, we still have U23 women. Don't we talk? We need to
cover
them. God.
Who's in that field? I got to look really quick.
I'll just get my winner, Katie Klaus.
Not Clara?
Mm-mm.
I think I got to go with Klaus, too. I think that's the pick.
But
I
you're right, David. That's a... So, yeah.
I want Clara Hunsiger on that. And KK Santos, he's got the home field advantage, too.
Yeah, I don't think she's quite as fast as the others, though. But hopefully,
that Klaus Hunsiger could be just a barn burner. That's going to be a good race.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. On to the questions now.
Where's Caroline Monnier going to finish?
In Canada.
Well, actually in France.
In France?
Well, is she going to France or is she just hanging out in
Canada?
Not yet.
She doesn't have... She's got a couple more weeks till she has to go.
Yeah.
Nationals isn't for a couple more weeks. She's just to hang out and cheer.
Yeah, exactly. And she certainly is one that would do that.
Yeah.
All right, Bill.
Yes.
Are we gonna do any more of Elliot's question?
Let me see what we got here.
Because he's got it broken down
in like 14
six parts, isn't it? Six parts. Yeah, it's really good.
You know, he jumping in with U23 win from Elliot. If not racing in U23s, would Clara Hunsiger be in the top five wide angle podium for elites? Would Katie Klaus be top 10? So from that, I think he's saying that Hunsiger is much faster than Klaus. I mean, you can't. You know, who knows? They're both had amazing.
Sure.
You know,
and on a one day, who knows what could happen? So
I just it's hard to bet against Katie, who has more national championships than she has years. But I think that Hunsiger definitely would be fighting for a top five for sure. She's one of those with Katie as well coming on strong. But yeah, I think that they are two people who the women's elite are happy are not racing in the race, much like we were talking about the men, that they're happy that Gage and Lance and Bruner and all of those guys aren't mucking up their elite races.
Yeah. Where would Gage finish in the elites?
I think he has a good chance of winning it.
Yeah.
You'd think he'd have a good chance of winning the elite race if he was in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. I think he'd be right there.
And we go back to that. We go back to that same.
Too, you think?
We go back to that same Cincinnati race where everybody was having those issues with their tires. Gage was the guy who won it.
Yeah, true.
Yep. And won it was really smart too. He didn't just like ride off the front and no one could stay with him. I mean, he was really smart with how he handled that race. So he's a really good rider.
Even a year before at Harbin Park. I mean, he's a guy who is not afraid of Steven Hyde.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, he'll ride with him. So.
Yep. Yep.
Not saying he's going to beat him, but yeah, he's definitely one that I think that whole field is more than happy to see him go win a U23 national championship.
Yes, I think you're right. All right, guys, is there anything else or we want to wrap this up?
Yeah, that was a tight hour 35.
All right. Nice. Mr. David Palin, if people want to get in touch with you on social media, where's the place to do it?
Instagram and the Twitter, I'm at Mr. David Palin. And come find us. We'll be there at Cyclocross Nationals in Louisville, Kentucky.
That's right. Bill, what about you?
I am at CX Airs on Twitter and on Instagram. But what I would love for you to do is head over to YouTube and just search for CX Airs there. Or you can even, here's an easy one. You can go to cyclocrosstelevision.com. Spoiler, that's just going to take you to my YouTube page. And then you can see all of the videos there. I've been recapping, I know I tell you this every week, recapping all of the C1s, a lot of the C2 races from the season. We've got about a season's worth of cyclocross up there for you to watch already. Going to be broadcasting from Nationals as well and from Ruts and Guts this next weekend, which you all should come and hang out there too. You can just go there and then go to Nationals. We can all sort of caravan
like,
together.
Like you're doing. Yeah.
And hey, then, Bill, let me ask you, if I were to go onto the YouTube and get to watch like recaps of all the races from the year that are really cool and I've been dying to see, how much would you charge me for that?
I would charge you a click.
Whoa.
That's all you have to do. Just click on it. You know what? If you really like it, hit the little thumbs up thing. And if you really, really like it, you can subscribe. And then, you know, when you go to YouTube, it'll be there right on your homepage. And then you'll know if a new video exists. And then here, thank you for asking, David, because here is the biggest way that you can pay for this service is by telling your friends to go and share and subscribe. And then we build that community. But let's say you really, really, really,
really
want to
really,
like,
really,
I
like
really
it.
Want to give you money for this. I want to pay for it. There is actually a
this
way
is
you,
worth $5 a month.
Yes, there is a way you can do it because Cyclocross Television is part of the Wide Angle Podium Network, just like this show, just like Bike Shop CX.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can go to Wide Angle Podium.
Those guys are really good.
Yeah. I mean, they're no Slow Ride podcast, but...
No. Oh, God, no. No. But who is? I mean...
We can all have aspirations. You know, because they have a little guy on there, right? It's not easy being little.
They do.
You can go to wideanglepodium.com. You can pick up some Grimper Brothers coffee while you're there, and you can also become a member of the podcast network part, and then you can choose what shows you want to support, such as Cyclocross Radio and Bike Shop CX and Cyclocross Television. So then a couple bucks come back to the production costs of the videos, and you're also helping support this podcast network that all three of us are very proud to be a part of and to build the community, and all that good stuff.
Yeah. All right, and if you want to get a hold of me, Scott Diedenbach, you can get me at Bike Shop CX on Twitter and at Bike Shop CX on Instagram. And if you're interested in following me on Instagram but not bike related stuff, where I talk to a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, about vinyl and post all my pictures of vinyl, follow me on Instagram at ScottNotBikes, and we can talk some vinyl. So there you go.
I don't know if I follow that yet. I gotta.
You
get
don't
on
follow
there.
That. You should follow that, man.
I will now.
You should see all the pictures that are already up there. I post at least one a day.
Louisville has some pretty awesome
record stores. Hey, we're planning. We might be planning a record store trip. So if people want to come, find us.
We're going to try to do a field trip at some point. Hopefully later in the day to evening.
Some people go out and do bourbon tours. We're all about the vinyl.
That's right. All right, guys. Have a good time at Ruts and Guts, Bill, and we'll see you in Louisville.
Yes, sir.
Bye.